Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is CNN Breaking News.
And welcome to The Lead. I'm Abby Phillip in for Jake Tapper. We come on the air this afternoon with huge breaking stories. First in Atlanta, video from just moments ago showing that orange SUV right there that rammed into the gate of an FBI office. We're told at least one person is now in custody, and we'll bring you everything that we know about that incident in just a few moments. But also breaking this hour, brand new images showing the aftermath of a deadly airstrike. Iran says that it is a consulate building in Syria that was hit, and it blames Israel for the attack. We have brand new reporting from the region coming up. And back here in the United States, a news conference just wrapped up in Baltimore. Authorities there detailing plans to reopen that major shipping port after last week's catastrophic bridge collapse. But first, let's begin with CNN's Evan Perez. Evan, what is unfolding right now outside of that FBI office in Atlanta after this really puzzling incident happened?
Right. Abby, it is still very much puzzling. We don't know a lot about this individual. We don't know what caused them to drive up to the FBI building there just in suburban area of Atlanta. We know it happened around 12:30, and there you can see the vehicle gets lodged against a secondary barrier that is intended to stop people from being able to drive into the unauthorized people from being able to drive into the FBI facility. But that's what happened. A person drove into that barrier and then exited the vehicle trying to enter the FBI field office complex there, and they were stopped by the security people. Now, we know that that person's been put in custody of the DeKalb County sheriffs. They were taken to a hospital for evaluation, and that includes a mental health evaluation. We've seen just in the last few minutes there, the tow trucks were trying to remove the vehicle from that barrier. They had sent in the bomb squad to look at it, to make sure that there was nothing, no further threat in that vehicle, no bombs, no other weapons were found at the scene. And what we're told is that this person exited the vehicle. There were no threats. There was nothing that he said that would explain why this happened, of course. So now that means that there's going to be further investigation where that person came from. We know from looking at those pictures that the vehicle has South Carolina license plates. We don't know whether that's where this person just drove from, or whether there's something else that is happening here that is related to this incident. So at this point, the FBI and the local authorities are going to wait for that evaluation. And you can anticipate that they will be facing both local and federal charges as a result of this incident. Nobody else was hurt. Nobody was hurt in this, which is, of course, a thankful thing. But Abby, as you know, there's been a heightened concern for the FBI and for law enforcement in general about threats to some of their agents. We saw in 2022 someone tried to attack the FBI office in Cincinnati. A person was killed later on in a standoff with police. So that's the context under which the concern that arises from this incident in Atlanta today, Abby.
Yeah, exactly right, Evan Perez. Thank you very much for all of that. Let's bring in now CNN's security correspondent, Josh Campbell. Josh, you yourself were with the FBI for several years. Can you help us understand where the investigative process now goes from here?
Yeah, so it starts with fully identifying this individual. And if that person had some type of driver's license or identification on them, that obviously would make that much easier for investigators. The vehicle itself with out-of-state plates, we don't know if that vehicle belonged to the individual. It could have been a rental car. If that is the case, authorities in short order would be able to find out who was the individual who actually rented the vehicle, looking at registration records and the like. But that is key first to figure out who this individual is. And then authorities will be working to determine what the actual motive was. Now, if this person obviously now in custody during the course of a custodial interview, if they, you know, utter something or provide some type of information to investigators about the motive, that obviously would certainly be helpful. But, you know, this is a precarious time for the FBI. We've seen over the last several years the FBI itself ramping up efforts to protect its own employees after agents and analysts and professional staff have faced numerous threats. There was that incident just a couple years ago in Cincinnati where you had an individual attempted to breach the FBI field office there. Investigators went back and looked at that individual, and this appeared to be, you know, someone central casting, you know, believing conspiracy theories and all of this anti-FBI vitriol that has been out there. And that is something that has certainly been of concern to law enforcement. I will note that if you look at the facility there itself, everything that was supposed to work appeared to work. You had that secondary barrier system, what's called the final denial barrier, which recedes into the ground and comes out. That stopped that vehicle, obviously, thankfully, from entering that property. But we know that over the last decade or so, we've seen more and more FBI field offices moving away from having their buildings in a downtown metropolitan area and more to these standalone type field offices, which provide them added layers of security, more standoff to prevent against some type of explosive devices. And so if there's any good news in what appears to be a very serious situation there is that the security procedures did work. But we know, just like after the August 2022 incident in Cincinnati, although that was one field office that was impacted, the ramifications certainly reverberated across the FBI's 56 field offices, with offices on alert just to ensure that there isn't some type of, you know, copycat type incident. That's something obviously that they are certainly guarding against. So there are a lot of things going on behind the scenes right now, not only the investigation of this individual, but also, you know, wanting to beef up security around the country just in case, specifically in this wave of, you know, threats that we've seen against that agency. The final point I'll make here is that we don't yet know if this is someone who, you know, intended to go there for some type of nefarious reason, whether this was possibly someone who was suffering from some type of mental health episode. And it's important to point out, as we always do, that just because someone may have mental health struggles, that doesn't mean that person will become violent. But that is something that certainly authorities will want to be, you know, ruling out here, ruling out, trying to determine what that specific motive is as they try to get to the bottom of this very serious situation in Atlanta, Abby.
Yeah, it's an important point, certainly on the mental health front. But of course, in an environment in which the FBI is a target of attacks, you know, public attacks from well-known public figures, I mean, what, as somebody who is in close contact with the FBI as part of your reporting, but also someone who understood what it was like to be in law enforcement over the last several years, what is the morale like at this moment when there seems to be constant attacks against this institution that is supposed to be there to protect Americans?
Yeah, you know, it is truly baffling for a lot of people in this organization. Obviously, the FBI is an organization like, you know, many law enforcement agencies where one's individual politics has no place in the carrying out of their duties. But we're talking about a law enforcement organization that skews more conservative than not. And, you know, I talk to people inside the FBI nearly every single day, and that has been the most baffling, that so many of the most vitriolic attacks against this agency have come from the right. And again, you know, it's important to point out, we don't yet know what the specific motive is here, so we're not connecting those dots that this was some type of political attack, but it is something that is certainly always front of mind for these law enforcement agencies as they do their work, both in their offices and out in the field, just, you know, showing your badge, showing your credentials, FBI, always concerning about what type of response that is going to, you know, spur from an individual. So it's certainly a precarious time for this agency, as we've seen them at the, you know, center of so many political attacks.
Yeah, and we, as we've seen, you know, people who are disturbed for other reasons, they're influenced sometimes by the environment that we are in this country. Josh Campbell, thank you for all of that. I want to now bring in CNN senior national security analyst Juliette Kayyem. Juliette, as you're looking at the scene here, what were you concerned about when you heard that there had been a car that had rammed into the FBI offices in Atlanta specifically?
So we don't speculate, but we also don't have to live in, you know, as if there wasn't a world around us in which a couple things are happening, as Josh has been talking about. One is the increased threat environment to law enforcement, to the FBI specifically, and then, of course, where we are. They're in Atlanta, Georgia, in which there's been a lot of public cases, the major case against Donald Trump. There's just been a lot of focus in Georgia, both about the litigation, but also the general atmospherics of the election. The third piece, of course, is that the ramming of the car is similar to other instances we've seen of domestic terrorism. And so you would want to look to all of those things because that is the threat environment we live in. It doesn't mean that's what we have here. It just means that if you're going in to investigate, one, you're worried about what's left in the car. And so it's good that they've sort of, you know, isolated and de-escalated anything that might be going on in the car. In this preliminary interview, you will want to find out what his motive is, what his mental state is, and what he might be saying. And then the last piece is, of course, everyone needs to be on defense. This is 2024, you know, we know what this year is going to be like, especially for law enforcement. And this idea of like the final denial that Josh was talking about, that's the way that these buildings are now constructed. Most people won't see it because they're often planters, but that's a way in which you protect these buildings. I just want to say one thing, which I never thought I would ever say. After 9/11, we talked about the militarization of our embassies throughout the world. Our embassies went from being in urban areas to more suburban areas because you needed to protect them through a lot of means. And as we've noted, the FBI headquarters, FBI divisions have been doing the same thing for the same reasons, because it's easier to protect a facility when it's isolated from downtown or isolated from other areas.
Yeah, it's an important point. Just looking at the scenery there, it's a little bit outside of, you know, the dense urban core for a reason, as you point out. But we've been talking sort of a bit about this idea of what we don't know about the mental health of the person. But we do know, according to the reporting, that this individual was taken directly to a hospital. If you believed that there was, you know, an ongoing acute threat, would that be the first course of action? What does it tell us?
Yeah, well, we don't know if he suffered injuries from either the ramming or some altercation that happened after, including during the arrest. This is, you know, these are high adrenaline moments. So lots of things are going on that it wouldn't have been easy, I think, to be able to capture him. So he might have some physical injuries that they are watching. They also may be nervous about his mental state and want him to be in a medical facility. So that would be totally normal. It would also not preclude these preliminary discussions with him to determine what his mental state is, and whether he's an ongoing threat, because, of course, the car is still there and you want to make sure he didn't have others that might have been involved. I just want to make clear here about the sort of like, you know, no one does this who doesn't have an agitated mental state. That is, of course, that could be true. We don't know what is going on here, but I think it's misleading, and I'll be careful here to say, well, if there's mental issues or previous mental issues, then that's excused, because as we know, many people with mental issues would never do this. But we also know that the vulnerable can tend to listen to things, listen to the noise and the violence and the incitement, and act in ways that you and I and others would know, well, that's not actually what we're going to do. So that's going to be part of the investigation as we learn more about his motive.
Certainly, it's true. We have a lot more to learn about this incident. Juliette Kayyem, thank you for all of that as well. And there's breaking news overseas happening right now. New images show the aftermath of a deadly airstrike today in Syria. Iran blames Israel, saying that its consulate building was hit. But hear what the United States is saying about all of this. Plus, massive protests unfolding in Israel. Demonstrators are calling for Benjamin Netanyahu to step down right now. How the prime minister is reacting next.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with breaking news in our world lead. You're looking here at the aftermath of a deadly airstrike reportedly targeting Iranian diplomatic and military officials. Iran is now blaming Israel for all of this, saying at least seven people have been killed in an airstrike on what Iran is saying is its consulate building in Syria. Two senior commanders in Iran's Revolutionary Guard's Quds Force are reportedly among the dead. Let's go straight to CNN's Natasha Bertrand. Now, Natasha, what more do we know about this blast? And it's raising fears right now about escalation in the war between Israel and Hamas.
Yeah, Abby, this appears to have been an attack on Iran's consulate in Syria, in Damascus. And according to Iranian officials, they are placing the blame squarely on Israel. They say that two senior IRGC, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps commanders, were killed in this strike, along with five other IRGC officials. And they are vowing decisive retaliation. So that is where the fear, of course, comes in of a potential escalation of this conflict between Israel and Iran. Now, when asked about this attack, the IDF declined to comment. They say they are not going to comment on any foreign media reports. However, a spokesman for the Israel Defense Forces raised doubts about the idea that this was even a consulate at all. Here's what he told CNN's Jim Sciutto earlier today.
According to our intelligence, this is no consulate and this is no embassy. I repeat, this is no consulate and this is no embassy. This is a military building of Quds forces disguised as a civilian building in Damascus.
So the U.S., for its part, now saying that they're trying to get a handle on what exactly happened here. The State Department saying that they are in conversations with regional partners and allies to try to figure out what happened. But they are very consistent in that they do not want to see this conflict escalated. And that is something that State Department spokesperson Matt Miller reiterated earlier today when asked about this.
And Natasha, you have some exclusive reporting that's new today about the Biden administration close to approving a major sale to Israel. What do you know?
Yeah, we're told that the administration is set to approve an $18 billion sale of F-15 fighter jets to Israel. That will be the largest foreign military sale to Israel since the war between Israel and Hamas erupted on October 7th. And it comes, of course, at a very delicate moment when U.S. Transactions and sales of military equipment to Israel are really under a microscope here. Now, these fighter jets would not be sent to Israel until about 4 to 5 years from now because they need to actually be produced. But really, this underscores the fact that the administration is not prepared at this point to start limiting, restricting, or conditioning military aid to Israel really at any point, despite the growing calls for them to do so because of all of the devastation that we are seeing in Gaza as a direct result of Israel's war there.
Yeah, this will not have an effect right now, but it certainly will have a political impact in the coming months. Natasha Bertrand, thank you very much. Also in our world lead, stunning video out of Jerusalem where thousands of protesters filled the streets calling for the resignation of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Many of the demonstrators are expressing their anger at his government for not having secured the release of all of the hostages who were kidnapped during the October 7th attacks. CNN's Melissa Bell is live for us in Jerusalem. Melissa, you're with the protesters right now. What are they telling you?
Well, the many protesters who were out here earlier have now headed home. But as you can see, what they've left behind is this row of tents, some of them camping out all night. And that row of tents goes all the way out, Abby, right down in front of the Knesset. The plan of this protest, which began last night, this is day two, it should go on till Wednesday morning, is to keep up the pressure on the Israeli government. What we saw when there were many hundreds of protesters out here last night, many thousands last night, was, Abby, that there's a great deal of anger that nearly 6 months on, more than 130 hostages remain in the hands of Hamas, and that this war we've been hearing repeatedly from protesters, aimed as it was at releasing the hostages, has failed on that front, but also, they say, is failing in terms of Israel's long-term security interests. And there's a great deal of anger out there about the images they're seeing coming out of Gaza as well. What you saw after October 7th was a great deal of political unity. Really, the country got behind the idea of this military intervention. Nearly 6 months on, all of the papered over cracks that we'd seen in the political spectrum here in Israel appear now to be reappearing, that unity looking much more fragile, Abby, than it was.
Yeah, it's very significant at this moment for these protesters to be making their voices heard. As you said, 6 months later, dozens of hostages still in the hands of Hamas. Melissa Bell, thank you very much. And this just in, a new request to expand a gag order involving Donald Trump in his New York hush money case, just as the former president wages a series of verbal attacks against prosecutors and also a judge. Plus, breaking sports news, former NFL player Vontae Davis has been found dead. What investigators are now telling us about this case. Just into CNN, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg is now asking Judge Juan Merchan, who is overseeing Donald Trump's hush money trial, to amend a gag order in that case to include family members of those involved in Trump's trial. Now, this comes after Trump stepped up his verbal attacks against the judge and also singled out the judge's own daughter. Those comments about Merchan and his family were part of a flurry of posts from the former president over the weekend. CNN's Kristen Holmes is over in frigid Wisconsin, where Donald Trump is about to bring his rhetoric back to the campaign trail.
Donald Trump is set to return to the campaign trail Tuesday with visits to the critical battleground states of Michigan and Wisconsin. But his focus appears to be on his impending criminal trial in New York.
This is all about election interference.
Upping his combative rhetoric, Trump spent the Easter holiday attacking perceived enemies in a series of social media posts, writing, quote, "Happy Easter to all, including crooked and corrupt prosecutors and judges," and going after the judge overseeing his New York hush money case and his daughter by name, as he seeks to discredit the case against him.
I have a Trump-hating judge with a Trump-hating wife and family.
The remarks come as judges around the country are voicing concern over Trump's attacks on the men and women assigned to hear his cases.
We do these jobs because we're committed to the rule of law and we believe in the rule of law. And the rule of law can only function effectively when we have judges who are prepared to carry out their duties without the threat of potential physical harm.
I've presided over thousands of hearings and trials during my nearly 20 years as a trial judge, and never did any defendants in my courtroom show such disrespect toward the court system as was shown by Donald Trump.
Trump also sharing a video that featured an image of President Joe Biden tied up in the back of a pickup truck. The former president saying in the Friday social media post that the video was filmed a day earlier on Long Island, where Trump attended the wake of an NYPD officer who was recently killed during a traffic stop.
We have to get back to law and order.
The Biden campaign responding in a statement, quote, "Trump is regularly inciting political violence, and it's time people take him seriously. Just ask the Capitol police officers who were attacked protecting our democracy on January 6th. Some Republicans taking issue with Trump's posts. but falling short of condemning the former president.
What is to raise the bar of civility and how we treat the other side of the aisle, for sure. Now, I don't think he was inciting violence, but it is representative of the political dialogue we have today.
And tomorrow we're going to see Donald Trump in both Michigan and Wisconsin. It's the first time we've actually seen Donald Trump on the campaign trail in a number of weeks. These two states, ones he won in 2016, then lost in 2020. They are viewed as critical on the pathway back to the White House. Abby?
All right, Kristen Holmes, thank you very much for that. And my panel is here with me now to discuss it all. Alencia, let's start with you. You can't be surprised, right, that Trump is back here again, attacking another judge, attacking a judge's family in this hush money case. But, you know, not surprised, but still, it's something that we should not get used to.
Absolutely, we should not get used to it. And as Kristen said in her package, it's interesting this came over Easter weekend, the weekend after Donald Trump decided to sell Bibles as a fundraiser. But it's clear that he's never opened a Bible, which says, do not provoke others to anger, do not seek revenge. There are so many pieces of Christianity that he does not follow, as he is hypocritical of what it means to be a leader here. And so it is interesting to see that there's this double speak coming from his campaign, the one that incites this violence, the one that caused January 6th, as we all remember, 2021. And yet they want to say that they are the side of law and order. It's actually, I would be frustrated if I was law enforcement, that he goes to the wake of a slain police officer, and yet he dismisses what happened to the police officers at the Capitol on January 6th. So I'm really concerned, and the numbers show and prove that violence has increased since he became a political figure. And unfortunately, this rhetoric means that it's only going to continue.
Joe, you know, the courts have been battling Trump on this now for many months, trying to respect his First Amendment rights, but also curtail his really unhinged attacks on the judicial system. Is it even working at all? Are they failing to rein in this kind of behavior, or is he just successfully ramping up the rhetoric for political reasons?
Abby, I think every institution is failing to rein in his behavior and hold him accountable. I mean, here we are, you know, 3 years removed from January 6th, and that son of a gun, the guy who incited that day, still hasn't been put on trial. He does this stuff because he believes he can get away with it. And Abby, life is too short, and there's too damn much at stake to dance around what Donald Trump, the horrible things he says and does. We're so numb to it. Think about what he did before the weekend started. He shared an image of the President of the United States bound and gagged, the President of the United States being kidnapped and possibly assassinated. That's the image Donald Trump shared. And I think the Biden administration, Abby, needs to forcefully push back on this stuff so that, as you said, we don't just gloss over this.
I mean, it's an important point. I mean, that image of literally anybody, I think, would be outrageous. But certainly when it comes to the sitting president of the United States, it's something else. Alex, I do want to play for you how a Republican congressman, Mike Lawler, responded on State of the Union yesterday with Dana Bash when he was asked about Trump's Truth Social post from the weekend. Listen.
I think everyone needs to tone down the rhetoric, the language. And, you know, obviously social media has become a vehicle by which to bludgeon people. I just think at the end of the day, the former president, current president, and on down, all of us have a responsibility to check our language.
Yes, that time that Joe Biden tweeted an image of Donald Trump gagged in a pickup truck, I don't seem to remember that, Alex. What do you make of this response?
Look, I think that's a pretty familiar set of notes to hear from a Republican who's trying to do a pretty careful dance between a district that he represents that's a pretty moderate district and a Republican Party that is really not very moderate when it comes to things like this. Abby, it reminded me of after January 6th, when first, you may recall, Kevin McCarthy said that Donald Trump bore responsibility for what happened. And then subsequently, he sort of fudged that and said, well, we all bear some responsibility for it, something to that effect, right? In the big picture, we all have a skin in the game here. I don't know that that's going to be super satisfying for voters to hear as we get closer to the election. I do think that it's a bit of a preview of the discomfort that Donald Trump is likely to cause, you know, most members of his party in politically contested parts of the country, because, you know, we can, there are a lot of things that are unpredictable about a campaign like this one. Donald Trump's behavior is really not one of them. The precise shape of his conduct and comments day to day may be unpredictable, but we all basically know what kind of space it's going to be in, and it's not going to make life easy for the Mike Lawlers of the world.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that for the Mike Lawlers of the world, Trump is always going to be pushing on the boundaries of what he can force vulnerable Republicans like that to defend. Joe, I want to go to Capitol Hill here, because over the weekend, the Speaker, Mike Johnson, had an interview with Fox where he discussed one of his members, Marjorie Taylor Greene's efforts to kick him out of a job. Listen to how he responded.
She and I exchanged text messages even today. We're going to talk early next week. Marjorie's a friend. She's very frustrated about, for example, the last appropriations bills. Guess what? So am I. As we discussed, Trey, these are not the perfect pieces of legislation that you and I and Marjorie would draft if we had the ability to do it differently. But with the smallest margin in U.S. history, we're sometimes going to get legislation that we don't like.
So, Joe, as someone who has spent a lot of time in Congress, you were a member, just like Marjorie Taylor Greene is, when you listen to what Speaker Johnson is saying there, what do you hear? I mean, he doesn't seem all that concerned about Marjorie Taylor Greene here.
No, Abby, I think it's good news. I think the Speaker realized a few days ago that he has to put this vote for aid to Ukraine on the floor. I mean, he can no longer keep it away. And there's almost like a peaceful resignation in his voice. And I think the calculation, Abby, that he's made is that most of his caucus does not want to go through that hellish chaos of another fight to find and pick another speaker. So I think he's politely just daring her, but he knows he's got to put this vote to the floor.
Yeah, I mean, including the people who kicked out the last speaker, many of those people are saying they're upset, but they're not willing to go through that whole song and dance all over again. Joe, Alencia, Alex, thank you all very much. And next, the plans now set for President Biden to visit the scene of what was that bridge in Baltimore and the massive collapse that unfolded.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. There's been a ton of writing about the album Cowboy Carter since it dropped this spring. But what grabbed my attention is a new documentary on CNN called Call Me Country, Beyoncé and Nashville's Renaissance. Lots of artists have tried to boot scoot their way onto country music charts. Why did this album cause such a stir? And what about both this pop star and this political moment has caused all this conversation? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
In our sports lead, some sad news out of South Florida. Former NFL player Vontae Davis found dead inside a home in Broward County today. Authorities say no foul play is suspected, but an investigation is ongoing. Davis played with three teams over 10 years in the NFL. His last was with the Buffalo Bills, where he abruptly resigned at halftime in what would be his final game in 2018. In our national lead, we just got an update from Maryland officials about the next steps for the deadly bridge collapse in Baltimore. The news comes as the White House has announced that President Biden will visit the site on Friday. CNN's Pete Montine is live near the collapse site in Baltimore. Pete, officials at that press conference just confirmed that they have started moving some of the debris from that river. What does that look like?
They've moved some of the debris, and now they're able to move some tugs and barges through this alternate shipping lane that Maryland officials, along with the United States Coast Guard, just announced that it just opened. And that is significant, maybe the most substantive update yet, almost on the one-week anniversary of this dramatic and disastrous collapse and collision here of Baltimore's Key Bridge. That means that boats like that could go to the port can get through in an 11-foot deep channel. It really pales in comparison to the 50-foot deep channel that used to be here, still blocked by the 4,000 tons of debris here. Also, the MV Dolly, which is still in place. The operative now is trying to cut pieces of that debris, of the Key Bridge, then lift it out of the way and move it out of the way. That is so significant because they're just going to do this piece by piece. Bite-sized chunks will enable them to clear the port of Baltimore, even though there is no definitive timeline on that just yet. I want you to listen now to the Coast Guard Admiral who is leading a significant part of this operation. He calls this really dangerous work for his crews in the murky Patapsco River here in the port of Baltimore. Listen.
These are steel girders, unlike the steel girders that you can see that are above the waterline still, which have significant damage. Below the waterline, along the bottom, is very challenging because these girders are essentially tangled together, intertwined, making it very difficult to figure out where you need to eventually cut so that we can make that into more manageable sizes to lift them from the waterway.
As far as the salvage operation goes here on Saturday, crews were able to move about 200 tons of debris here. They say by the end of today, they will move another 350 tons of debris. The goal is to open up some more alternate shipping lanes, two more on the horizon here, but still no real timeline just yet on when the Port of Baltimore will fully reopen for those 8,000 jobs on the line here, Abby.
Wow, Pete Muntean, thank you very much for that. And a new turn for abortion rights in America. We'll have the ruling just in from the Florida Supreme Court. Plus, there is trouble for Donald Trump's claim to fame of his net worth, taking a major tumble just days after the parent company of his Truth Social Media company went public on the stock exchange. We're back with more breaking news now on The Lead. Florida's Supreme Court has just ruled that the state's six-week abortion ban soon will go into effect. But the court is also allowing a proposed constitutional amendment protecting the right to an abortion to go on the ballot as well in November. The amendment will need approval from about 60% of voters to pass. But similar amendments have passed in other conservative states, including Kansas. And just moments ago, we are learning that former President Donald Trump's net worth has plunged by more than $1 billion. Now, this is after shares of Trump's media and technology group, the company behind Truth Social, lost about 21% of its value just today. The stock's tumble came after the company announced it lost $58 million last year and generated very little revenue. The company's accountants warn, quote, substantial doubt about its ability to continue as a going concern. And starting today, California's minimum wage for fast food workers is $20 an hour. That applies to about 500,000 people. For some, that is a 25% pay raise in just a week. $20 an hour, it may sound like a lot, but just keep in mind, California's cost of living is one of the highest in the country. But many local franchisees do say that paying workers more could force them to raise prices even more. And we are just a few hours away from a thrilling end to the Elite Eight round of the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. First up, the widely anticipated rematch between LSU and Iowa. Iowa's Caitlin Clark seeking revenge after losing last year's championship to LSU. Then we've got UConn versus USC. Can USC freshman Juju Watkins take her team to the next level? CNN's Bryn Gingras is in Albany, New York, where LSU and Iowa are about to battle it out for a Final Four spot. Bryn, this is going to be a huge double feature tonight.
I mean, this is going to finalize, right, Abby? Who is going to the Final Four on the women's side for the NCAA tournament here in Albany? The excitement is intense. I got to tell you, there are fans that have been waiting outside this MVP arena in Albany, where we are right now in the atrium, just trying to get in several hours before the game is ready to start. And that is because they all have their eyes fixated on this rematch that's about to happen. Remember last year, the NCAA championship game, it was between these two teams, the Iowa with Caitlin Clark and also, of course, LSU with Angel Reese. And there was so much rivalry between those two players, the trash talking, the intense passion with which those two players play for each of their teams, and is about to go down yet again here in Albany. Now, I got to say, a lot of people were a little disappointed that this is not the national championship game, but nonetheless, by the end of the night, one of these teams is going to be cutting down those nets headed to the Final Four. It is a very exciting atmosphere to be here. I got to tell you, talk to a few of the fans who are waiting to come in, some driving several hours overnight through the night into today just to make it to today's games. It's going to be an exciting night, Abby.
Yeah, I mean, what a moment I feel like we're living through for women's sports. There is so much excitement for these teams, and you can see why, because as you just pointed out, there is so much conversation about the narrative, the storyline behind what's going to happen tonight on the court.
Yeah, look, Abby, I was talking to some people, you know, people that are about the same age as me, you know, who grew up playing basketball just like I did. And, you know, basketball really wasn't shown on TV. You didn't have these star players that were just showcased on television. And now that's what you see. Little girls are able to look up to women who, like Caitlin Clark, like Angel Reese, who have so much passion and so much competitiveness and so much drive. It's exciting to see. And you know what? The numbers are showing it, Abby. If you look at the tickets that are being sold just for the Final Four of the women's, they are way more expensive than how much the tickets are being resold for the men's Final Four. So the women's games are finally catching up, and everyone who I've talked to said it's about time. Abby?
I love it. I got to say, I love it. Bryn Gingras, thank you very much. Albany, New York.
All right.
And the hype is already building for another big event coming up next week. We'll be back in a moment.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.